Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning, I'm delighted to welcome some friends into the house, James and Krisha Newport of the Gatlinburg Improv Festival.
Hello.
Hi.
And Lawrence Evans from the Sweet Fanny Adams Theater in Gatlinburg, host of this fabulous Gatlinburg Improv Fest, coming up this weekend, actually even starting as early as Thursday night. So tell me, how did the Gatlinburg Improv Fest get started?
A really strange dream after a late night pizza, I believe. I used to do improv in Florida with a group called Sack Theater, and Christian and I moved up here. How many years has it been now?
6 years.
6 years ago, and I'm mostly retired now, but I miss doing improv and performing, and there doesn't seem to be much of it up here, except for a group called Einstein Simplified that I believe you have some connection with.
Right? Yes, and that's part of the thing. Now, this is an opportunity to celebrate what's going on in the Smoky Mountains and what's going on in Gatlinburg, and when you guys decided to do an improv festival, obviously I've been doing improv in the area for coming up on 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I sent in my dues. I paid. I don't know if you noticed, but the application fee for Einstein Simplified came out of my personal account.
I did notice that.
I dragged those other boys kicking and screaming into this event. So we're excited about performing. The group that I'm in will perform on Friday and Saturday night at Sweet Fanny Adams Theater in Gatlinburg. And let me ask Lawrence Evans from Sweet Fanny Adams real quick. What is the connection there? I mean, how do we find you involved in this mix?
Well, it revolves around Krisha. We hired Krisha at the beginning of the season to be in our shows, and she's done a great job. And then, obviously, we met James through Krisha, and this discussion came up about James's background, and it seemed like a fabulous idea. We're often dark this time of year for 4 months. We close between January and April, mm-hmm. and don't open up till May, so our regular season is May through December. So this is a fabulous opportunity for us to do something instead of just sitting around for the winter.
Now, what you've just said really also keys into something that the folks in Gatlinburg like to do. When you talk to the folks involved in the city and in the tourism area, they're trying to build up this low seasons. Obviously, everybody comes to Gatlinburg in the fall to look at the leaves, but here you are bringing business into February. So how has the city reacted in the Chamber of Commerce and folks like that?
They're really behind it. The special events department in Gatlinburg is listed on their website and made it one of their Winterfest events. You know, like you said, Gatlinburg's kind of changed since I've been there the last 20 years. You know, you used to be able to run down the parkway.
You're not a native?
Oh, no. I'm originally from Wales. You know, I'm married into the family at Sweet Fanny Adams. But, you know, the last 20 years, it's become more of a year-round area. And so, you know, we need to be doing more during these winter months. And
mm-hmm.
This is a fabulous idea, you know, and just something fun for us to be doing.
Terrific. So here's an opportunity. You've got the city behind it. It's the tail end of their Winterfest celebration before they kick into Springfest or whatever the next one is.
I think it's the last weekend. The lights will be up. So come up then and see them.
If you wanted to come to the whole festival, part of the festival, what's the catch?
It is a $100 for a full weekend pass, and that gets you through Thursday and all the way through Saturday, any show, every show. Most all of the shows are $10 for individual ticket prices, except our headlining show, which is Six Guitars. That is Chase Padgett out of Orlando. His show is $12
okay.
for individual tickets.
And then there's a day pass for Friday and a day pass for Saturday.
The day pass for Friday is $40, and the day pass for Saturday is $50. And that's just differing the amount of shows.
Okay. And in addition to the local folks, Einstein Simplified and the guy you know from Florida, Chase mm-hmm. Padgett, you've got some other improv groups from the region involved. Who else is coming?
We do. We have Shenanigans out of Cleveland, Tennessee. They are a Lee University college group. I think they have 12 members.
I looked them up on YouTube. It seems like they've got a lot. And that's, of course, the same school that was on one of those singing competitions with the a cappella groups.
Exactly.
Too. So they've got a lot of arts and people down there.
And we also have Obprov. Is that correct? Am I pronouncing obv?
Like obvious.
Oh.
So obv, which is Dan Buck, who's a theater teacher at Lee University. He's actually was in Orlando back when I was living there. And he sent a couple improv students to me from his school there. And one of them was just recently voted the third funniest improviser in Orlando. Ooh. And the other one is flying jets for the Air Force. So he picks some good people.
Okay, and you've got more still after
we
that.
We do. We have reasonably priced babies. No, we're not going to sell babies. They are a group out of Asheville, North Carolina. And I believe it will be a 3-member group that's coming. I think there are 5 members of the group.
Oh, terrific.
I think it just may be three. Karen Stobey is somebody I met doing improv in Milwaukee back in my comedy sports improv days back in the 80s. And just somebody I've kept in touch with, and she's moved to Asheville in the past decade or so, maybe.
There is a certain fellowship, a certain brotherhood of improv, and that's what we're going to kind of get into. We're talking with James Newport, Christian Newport, and with Lawrence Evans. James and Chrisha are organizing the Gatlinburg Improv Festival. Lawrence runs the Sweet Fanny Adams Theater that hosts the whole shebang. Coming
Lawrence
up.
Is organizing as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Coming up.
I've given myself the title of the crutch, you know, the person to lean on, you know, for all the performers.
Right. And it's coming up starting this Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So this is coming up this weekend. But what we're talking about is this unity, this brotherhood that improvisers have. And I recently read a book called Improv to Improve Your Business. And it was, how do you take these rules of improv? How do you take the stuff that that we learn just as theater games and translate it to real life? In other words, do better in your job, in school, and just in whatever. So let's talk about that connection that you make, that trust that you have to build up with the other people on stage that makes you want to stay in touch with them how many years later?
Yeah, I think it's really a great sort of social lubricant, you know, performing improv together. Because I was looking through that list of the Ten Commandments that they had listed in that book you mentioned. And, you know, trust was, I think, the very first one. And it's something that, you know, is really hard to kind of give. We're not really trained to give trust right away to people, you know, on first contact. And improvising, a lot of times you're thrown into scenes, especially in a festival sort of competition. You're thrown together with people you've never performed with before.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know, you know, the basic rules of improv, yes, and accepting offers and giving and sharing and working well together.
And you're going to have to explain all that.
Yeah.
Know.
Well, yeah. How much time do we have?
We've got half an hour.
All right, we got it. All those things that you really do bond and appreciate each other more and have a new respect, I think, once you've learned to share that trust in those moments, those improv moments.
Because what you have to do, as you mentioned, is accept whatever that other person says as truth for the purposes of the scene. Because you cannot, in an improv scene, deny. If someone says, hey, I'm handing you a cantaloupe, you can't say, no, it's a screwdriver. It just doesn't play. It ruins the scene. The audience gets uncomfortable. It creates a bad moment.
From that point on, it is a cantaloupe. And I think in our everyday lives, we're kind of taught almost to be skeptical and not trust and worry and fear. And it's really freeing, I think, to play in the improv world.
Mm-hmm. That's true, because you cannot be selfish either. I mean, there's another classic textbook of improv called Truth in Comedy, where they give the classic example of Joan Rivers, who's a very funny person. But she failed at improv because she, in effect, did that and said, no, it's not. It's something else. And she got a big laugh at the expense of everybody else in the group who then doesn't want to perform with her anymore.
Yeah. And I think by talking about the trust in life, by automatically accepting someone, even a stranger that you meet in your life and work situation, if they present you with something and you automatically accept it, even if in fruition it may not necessarily be what happens in life. But I think by naturally accepting someone, that you build trust with them.
By giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Exactly.
At the start, instead of immediately trying to tear them down.
Yeah.
I've always shared with people, too, that when they take improv classes, that I'm going to teach them everything their parents told them not to do. So when you were young and you got to the point where you could talk and walk, your parents told you to sit down and shut up, basically, you know, stay out of trouble. And I get everybody to stand up and start talking.
All right.
To get up and play. And I don't know that kids really are taught really well how to play well together. They're kind of thrown into the room and say, go play. And if a fight breaks out, then the parents will step in and break it up. But they're really simple things that, you know, you can share with people and kids to facilitate that play,
mm-hmm.
that healthy, good, accepting play.
All right. Now, James Newport, director of the Gatlinburg Improv Festival, this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday mostly, you're going to be teaching some classes as well. The website's GatlinburgImprovFest.com. It's mm-hmm. easily found on Google and wherever else you need to look. What do you teach, and what can someone expect? Let's suppose someone's hearing this morning and says, you know what, I would go take a beginner class, an intro to improv, just to learn some of those skills for society.
Right. We're still working on a schedule for classes, but my guess is Saturday morning sometime I'll be teaching a basic improv class.
And that'll be on the website.
Mm-hmm.
When?
Yep.
All right. So what would happen in the class? What would I experience as a newbie?
One of the first things that I like to try to kind of get everybody playing and comfortable with is failing and looking silly. So I always do an exercise called Alien Tiger Salesman, where everybody does their best alien, beady, 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 their tiger, rawr, and a salesman, hi there. And they're just big over-the-top characters, and they stand back-to-back, usually in groups of three, turn around, and they all have to pick one of those three things, the alien, the tiger, the salesman, and commit to it loud and proud and do it towards the other members of their group. And they kind of forget about the fact that they're doing this loud, bold, crazy animation and noise to go with it, because the test of it is to see if they can all do the same one at the same time. I'm explaining that very well.
Okay, so it's sort of like a gigantic rock, paper, scissors,
yeah,
but with sound and motion.
Yeah, and the challenge I tell them is, okay, now turn back to back again. Don't tell each other what you're going to do. Pick one of those three things, but try to pick the one you think everybody in your group is going to pick.
Yes.
And there's that great success if they do. It's like, oh, that's amazing. How do we do it? And there's that great failure if they, you know, don't succeed. It's like, oh, we were so close. Two of us had it. Or all three were different. No, oh, my God.
You find the people who want to take the blame for themselves and the ones who immediately want to throw their partner under the bus.
Yeah, yeah. How did you not know I was going to do salesman? It was so obvious.
And there's another game that James likes to play to kind of open up your brain to realize that sometimes it's okay to make mistakes. And I think that was another...
That's one of the commandments of improv is mistakes are good. You learn from them.
Mistakes are okay. Yeah. And Frank, you know the game Categories.
Yeah.
But it's amazing when you're put on the spot to name colors, how few colors that there are in the world.
Yeah.
But James is really great about facilitating letting you make a mistake and letting you know that it's okay, that you know, there are only four colors when you're playing that game. You've got five people on stage and there's four colors.
Yeah, because the fifth person just draws a blank.
Yeah, and James is really good about making everyone feel as comfortable as they want to be, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. So just those beginning classes are just all about letting yourself go and kind of, like he said, letting go of those yeah. rules that you... learning new rules that are okay to play rules.
I had the benefit of going to a children's hospital convention, mm-hmm. and it was all radio people who had done radiothons and things like this. So they brought in someone to speak to DJs, and they brought in some improvisers from Chicago, from the Improv Olympic. One of the guys is, if I say the name Joe Bill, you guys are going to light up and know exactly who I'm talking about, but for the purposes of the radio audience, he's a famous improviser from Chicago, does a show called Bass Prov, where it's him and a guy, and they sit in a boat on stage, and they riff all night, and it's one of the most fantastic things. Well, he shows up and he just decides he's going to take us through the basics of improv, kind of trying to get us to work on these skills that we would apply in other parts of life. So he wants to have us do a listening game, and it's a simple one word at a time story. And he put us in a circle and said, all right, here's what you're going to do. Each person speaks one word at a time. We're going to go around. You're going to tell a story. But you could spot the guys, and usually it was the grizzled DJ who'd been around forever, and it comes to him, and he has to, no matter what it is, he's got to say something funny, you know, it's going to come around to him, so it gets to be his turn, and he has to say rhinoceros, even though it makes no point to the story. He has destroyed the story because he was so busy thinking of his own word and not listening to the other people in the group.
Yeah, there's that tendency to kind of kill the moment. I mean, they think, oh, this is going to be great, I'm going to say something funny, it's going to be great, it's going to help everything. But a lot of times it kind of kills the whole flow, the whole moment mm-hmm. of everything else. He's like, oh, that was funny, but we have nothing left now.
One of the guys in my own group asked me the other night, he says, how come when we play that one word at a time game, how come you're always in there last? I said, well, let me tell you. I had the benefit of being instructed by an improv genius in this game, number one. And number two, you have to completely blank your mind and only listen to the story. And then, if, for example, if I were to stop talking in the middle of a sentence, you would know exactly what to
say.
Precisely.
Glad I was listening.
Because it's not that hard when you're listening, because there's nothing to it. There's no thinking in the game at all. It's just a listening game.
Exactly. And that's, you know, as you have talked about these, I think it's commandment number three I see here.
Is yes.
About, you know, listening. And I think we don't spend enough time in the workplace, in our lives, listening to people. I think we always, but our natural tendency is to think of what's next. What do we got to do next? What do I got to say next? And just to relax in that basic conversation, like you said, and free your mind completely and just listen to mm-hmm. what people are saying. And, you know, there's a lot of great. You've been improvising, Lawrence. What do you find? Lawrence is beginning improvising right now with all of us. So.
That's Krisha Newport from the Gatlinburg Improv Festival. She works at Sweet Fanny Adams, and Lawrence Evans, I guess, is your boss there, right?
He is one of the bosses.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm one of a partnership of my wife, my brother-in-law, and then my mother-in-law still owns the facility. She was one of the founders.
So now you're taking some improv classes.
Yeah, and really what you guys are talking about is the reason I decided to join in and join the group. I'm not a performer. I've always been the tech guy, you know, backstage doing the sound and things like that. But Sweet Fanny Adams is actually, through James and Krisha, have formed their own improv group. And so they'll be performing this weekend.
Oh, excellent.
Too, really for the first time. And I decided to join the group just really to kind of facilitate what you've been talking about, being part of the group, being a yes and person instead of no but.
Yes.
I kind of spotted this even before it came up in James in his life philosophy, and Krisha too, that you know, they're kind of living this improv. And I started making the connection after taking a few classes, going, wow, he actually walks this walk. It's an everyday occurrence for
him. It's a philosophy.
Yeah, and we've talked many times about that.
Yes.
And I think it's a beautiful philosophy. It's kind of a Zen Buddhist thing going on for me. You know,
For me, it's always been obvious because my chosen field of work is very similar to improv. You know, when you get on radio, you ad lib within a format like we're doing today. You know, there's no script for this program. We're just going to have a conversation, and when we're done, we're done. And the same with some of the other stuff that I've been working on. You try, and even when you're doing it with a partner, let's say you're doing a little video shoot and you've got to get through a 30-second promo with a partner, I try to tell the other one, don't worry about the script. Just know the bullet points and mentally check off. If I say something, then you don't repeat me. And if you say something, I won't repeat you. All you got to do is pay attention and listen, and we'll get through this fine.
Right. It's funny that you mentioned that. I actually heard someone being interviewed recently who is a television anchor, and they were talking about reading off of a teleprompter and said that, you know, you can't read directly off of a teleprompter. You have to know your bullet points and just kind of flow in between. And I think, you know, that's another great improvised thing is you kind of have an outline of a game that you're playing, but you have no idea how you're going to get to where you're going. It's kind of like getting in a car but not knowing how to drive it and not having a map to know where you're going, and you know you have to get there, and you will eventually.
And that's the beautiful thing, because there's no wrong answers when you're performing improv. It really doesn't matter. There's no pressure. You know, if the other person says in the scene that you're going to New Jersey, well, then you go to New Jersey. It doesn't make any difference if you wanted to go to Arizona or not. You're not going there anymore. You're going to New Jersey. You just take and go with it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of initial fear, even with professional actors. I worked with a lot in Orlando, working for Disney and Universal, that just totally fear improv because, like, well, I wouldn't know what to do if I didn't know what to say, if I didn't have my script, if I didn't have my lines to, you know, to deliver to the audience. And that fear of saying the wrong thing, what you said before, you know, there will be no wrong thing if you accept everything that comes your way.
It's sort of the difference between being an actor and a reactor. Mm-hmm. And that's another type of, you know, obviously people who are in the hosting business or in the radio business, that you can either be an actor or a reactor. That occurs in stage as well, where you've got people who strictly really are only actors. They can just read the lines, deliver the lines perfectly and beautifully, but look at them when they're trying to introduce somebody at an award show. My gosh.
We were just talking about that.
Oh, they struggle, you know?
You would think someone who is on camera their entire lives that you see, and they're brilliant actors, just panic in that moment. I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
I have a theory that some of these actors at like the Oscars and the Golden Globes and things like this, I think they deliberately miff the line because they know it's so bad and so cheesy, the line that's been written for them. They want the audience to know, I didn't write this.
Yeah, don't even commit to it. And the winner for this one that I'm really not interested in.
Come on, sell it. You can memorize a whole play. You know, you can do Shakespeare for 3 hours on stage and you can't memorize 30 seconds.
And that's what frightens me. I mean, having to memorize the long script. I'm like, oh my God, that's terrible.
Maybe that's why people who don't want to memorize are drawn to improv, you know, because there's no memorization whatsoever. In fact, if you do memorize, you're done for. You become the guy who's trying to work rhinoceros into the one word at a time story, and it will not fit.
It's about a sheep, Tom. It's about a sheep.
We're talking improvisation, one of my favorite topics in the entire world, with James Newport, Krisha Newport, and Lawrence Evans. Nice. They are putting together the Gatlinburg Improv Festival this coming weekend. It starts Thursday night, runs all day Friday, all day Saturday. It's at Sweet Fanny Adams in Gatlinburg. The theater is conveniently located right there on the strip in Gatlinburg. You can find all the information about tickets, about classes at GatlinburgImprovFest.com. I'm excited about being there. I mean, I told you, I paid my dues. I literally wrote a check. I'm there.
We're excited to have you. Also, in case someone listening doesn't have the ability to Google and or go to the website, but they can use a map. It's 461 Parkway in Gatlinburg, and it's at traffic light number 3.
Okay.
So just in case anyone doesn't have the ability to go to a website.
Yeah, just show up.
Yeah, just show up.
Show up this weekend and
absolutely.
And get yourself in.
Mm-hmm. We will have snacks.
What kind?
Oh, what are we going to have, Lawrence? Popcorn?
Yeah, we have the world-famous Acme popcorn at the theater.
Yeah, that's the kind that Roadrunner enjoys, the Wile E. Coyote mix.
Also, next door is a great little wine bar, nice restaurant that's also one of our sponsors. It's called Uva. So people are invited to go there, pay their dues over there, grab a glass of wine, can grab a beer, and can enjoy that at Uva and come on over and enjoy the show as well if that's something people would like.
Sounds like a nice nice weekend event. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, most of the shows are about an hour long. I think, James, some of them may be a little shorter. But so each show is like an hour show followed by a half hour break in between. So you'll be able to wander around, wander next door, and we might have some musical acts in between to kind of cover some of the breaks, but I think I'm trying to add them up as I'm looking at it here. Now it looks like we have 13 shows all in all over those.
Well, if I go missing, I'll be at one of the fudge stores, probably the candy, getting chocolate.
Fun. Yeah.
Based on attendance, we're going to hopefully have some late night throwdowns with, we'll mix and match some people from some improv groups. And yeah, absolutely, Frank, love to have you. And get them involved and play a little bit. Because it's always good, I think, for improvisers to see different improvisers, even though the skill is the same, the art is always different.
You know, I unabashedly steal improv games because you can't steal the material. That's the beautiful thing about it, because it's just impossible. You always had to be there because every show is different. I used to go to Disney World and go. They had a wonderful little improv theater at downtown Disney
called Comedy Warehouse.
Yes. Yeah. I used to go there and sit in the audience and take notes. And I was writing down the names of the games and how to do the games, or better yet, if they did a game that we already were doing here in Tennessee, what did they do differently? How did they do it better than we do it?
Exactly.
And I even went on YouTube and looked up these kids from Lee University that you're talking about. I think it's Shenanigans. Mm-hmm. There's a game called Dead Bodies, which, naturally I would go right to. And I thought, I like the way they do it better. I'm going to try that someday soon in Knoxville.
Yeah. And you'd mentioned classes. James will be teaching a class. Also, Chase Padgett, who's coming from Six Guitars, will be teaching a 3-hour musical improv intensive. He's going to help facilitate you improvising songs.
This is the scariest thing in the world for me.
It's terrifying.
Is the singing games. Tell me what this is going to be like. Or tell me about Chase Padgett. I don't know him.
Well, he's just a musical genius, really, an improviser as well. He started taking classes and workshopping with us in Orlando. Showed up mysteriously when we were having our first baby in Orlando, me and Krisha, and played to us in the hospital room. And we thought, we must get to know this man better. And he went on to do a one-man show called Six Guitars. Took it to a bunch of fringe festivals.
And this is the show he's doing at Gatlinburg Improv Fest also.
Yep. And got some really amazing accolades for his musical talent as well as his improv talent. And he just makes it look easy. He's one of those people that you kind of hate a little bit.
Yes.
Because he's, just picks up a guitar and sings. And
by coincidence, or maybe not, you guys were at SAC in Orlando.
Yep, right.
That was the improv theater there, which the most famous alumni of that theater has to be Wayne Brady. Because of his, he's been on national television, right?
Yeah, I joined SAC right about the time he was getting ready to head west to California.
But what a musical improviser.
Oh, yeah, he's unbelievable. Amazing. He's amazing. And just a charming guy as well. So, but again, we kind of hated him a little bit when he came out on stage because everyone loved him and he could sing really well and make up songs just like that. And I love to do it. I sing terribly. I'm not the greatest musical improviser, but it's fun.
Because that's the one that, of all the things you do in improv, the games, the musical games, the creating a song on the spot is the thing that I think the audience is the most cynical about. They don't believe that someone can make up a song on the spot like that.
It's very true. The best way to diffuse that is a new, I'm sure you've played Tag Team Monologue. Generally, you take three improvisers and one person begins a monologue and they tap a person out and continue on with the story. I recently saw an improvised sketch that was a tag team music monologue. It was three different people singing the same song.
I'm getting that feeling in the pit of my stomach right now, like, don't make me do that one.
And it's brilliant and was amazing to see three people just coalesce and come together and make a really great song out of nothing. And
so there's a skill set. And I guess the one thing that I do find about improv is when you know the rules of the games, it's a lot less frightening. The audience doesn't necessarily know them. I've used the analogy of, well, from our point of view, we're looking out at you and we see the scaffolding that holds up the imaginary sets. And all you see is the nice painted imaginary set.
Exactly.
Does that make sense at all?
It does. It does.
Well, you've done it. So, of course, it makes sense to you.
I think so. I mean, for me as an improviser, it's really kind of training your brain to think on three different levels at once. You know, what are you doing? What is everybody else doing? And how is the audience reacting to everything that's going on in that moment? And I think people kind of freak out a little bit and say, that's just too much. I can't think of all that. I've just got to focus on what I'm saying or what you're saying. I can't do it all. And
well, that's one of the commandments of improv is you live in the moment. You're so in the moment and so connected to those three things you just mentioned that it's all there's nothing else in the world except those three things.
Yeah, you can't anticipate anything. You have to just wait for it to happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that says it so beautifully. Yes.
And going back to what, you know, accepting those moments, you know, when they say be in that moment, it really just means accepting everything that's coming your way. Don't put up a fight. Don't argue. Don't stop. Don't be the difficult obstacle that everyone needs to overcome. You know, help them get to that that end point.
All right. Well, let me ask you. I have this issue occasionally. Is how do you deal with on stage when someone is blocking you or someone has already decided?
I call it steamrolling.
Yeah.
Yeah. My term, and I think I learned that from James, is, you know, somebody that has an agenda.
Because this happens in the business world, too. I mean, you picture yourself in a conference room in a meeting somewhere and you want to say your point, but the other person is just denying you at every point.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can share with them, you know, those points, you know, there's, you know, words that they'll say to stop you. No, don't. But, you know, those negative words that you can point out and say, well, you know, when we try to create something together, maybe if you say something besides, no, please leave me alone, go away, might be more helpful. And then if you do have, you know, that person who's, you know, suddenly eradicated everything you've brought to this scene, to this moment, go with their idea. Make the switch.
Okay.
You know, and sometimes that's hard for people, too. It's like, well, I brought you this wonderful gift in this scene. Here, use this here. And they're like, that's not important to me now. Listen to what I have to say.
It kind of reminds me of that great episode of The Office in which Steve Carell's character, Michael, goes to an improv class. I guess he's been going all along. We don't know that, but he's been a regular at going to improv class. And they show him at his class. And, of course, in every scene, he puts his fingers into the shape of a gun and shoots everyone else in the scene until he's the only person left alive every time.
Exactly. And there, you know, there's so many different types of improvisers, but there are those people. There are people who...
They just deny in a way or are selfish instead of giving. They're taking instead of giving.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of people who have improvised long enough to where they make it a game within their game. That sometimes they can set themselves up and say, well, I'm not going to let this person build this scene. I'm going to do this. And I think, you know, that people sometimes, but that's another way of improvising. And I think to be a good improviser, you have to be able to improvise with those people and make it fun. And, you know, sometimes you just have to acquiesce and say, okay,
I've seen some really good improvisers walk out and to start a scene and pull a switch, a fast switch by like a gender switch on their co-actor, you know, in that scene, or just do something that they, you know, you get the little glint in their eyes. Like, I know I have just thrown you the biggest curve. You had an idea of what the scene was going to be about, and I just took it 180 degrees.
That kind of forces them to roll with it, doesn't it? The other person to roll with it. And it's one of the things that, bringing it back to the, you know, comparing it to real life type thing, is what I've liked about, you know, James, about working with James, is that willing to roll with it, you know, willing, just because they're not living the rules of improv doesn't mean, you know, you have to not as well. You know, you'll keep going.
Wonderful.
And stay true to the rules despite the other person not doing it, you know. And you often have conversations with people Well, you see that, you know, they're thinking of the next thing to say. They're not listening.
It's true.
They're not following that rule of improv of listen to the other person.
And sadly, right now, I'm thinking of the next thing to say because it's thank you for your time. We have to go.
I can kind of see that.
I wish we could keep going, but we do have to stop at this point. I very much appreciate James Newport, Christian Newport, and Lawrence Evans talking about the Gatlinburg Improv Festival this weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday mostly, at the Sweet Fanny Adams Theater in Gatlinburg. Check out GatlinburgImprovFest.com or just show up on the Parkway.
461 Parkway, traffic light number 3.
For not only great shows and great comedy, great entertainment, but classes with skills that you can apply to your actual life as
Absolutely.
Well.
Make you happier every day.
And at one of the best venues in Gatlinburg.
All right.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you for being here. This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.